Thaumaturgy is quite as fascinating as number theory, thank you very much. The hermetic disciplines descended from Trismegistus, as engrossing as the sciences he dabbled in. But do I want to dedicate myself to working in a secret field for life? I can't very well go back to Civvy Street. They'll let me if I ask nicely, but only as long as I agree to have nothing to do with a wide range of occupations, including everything I can possibly earn a living at. This will cause problems, family problems as well as money problems. Mum will probably ignore me, and Dad will yell about slacking and lay about hippies. Having a son in the civil service suits them down to the ground. They both get to ignore the inconvenient evidence of their mistaken marriage and carry on with their lives, secure in the knowledge that at least they did the parental thing successfully. Meanwhile, I haven't served long enough to earn a pension yet. I suppose I could stagnate in tech support indefinitely, or mutate into management. A generous portion of the laundry's payroll is devoted to buying the silence of incompetent lambs, manufacturing work for people who need something to fill the time between their first accidental exposure and final retirement. There's nothing kind-hearted about this. Bumping off talkative voices is an expensive, dangerous business, with hideous political consequences if you get caught, and it makes for an unpleasant working environment. Paying dead wood to sit at a desk and not rock the boat is comparatively cheap and painless. But I'd like to think life isn't quite so meaningless. Seagulls wheel and squawk overhead. There's a faint thud behind me. One of them has dropped something on the beach. I turn round to watch, just in case the bastards are trying to toilet bomb me. At first glance, that's what it looks like. Something small, like a starfish, and faintly green. But on closer inspection, I stand up and lean over the thing. Yes, it's starfish-shaped. Radial symmetry, five-fold order. Seems to be a fossil, some kind of greenish soapstone. Then I look closer. I know that only 200 miles away, most of the nuclear reactors in Europe are sitting on the Normandy coast, where the prevailing winds would blow a fallout plume out toward us. And you wonder why the British government insists on keeping its nuclear weapons. Nevertheless, this is weirder than any radiation mutant has a right to be. Each tentacle tip is slightly truncated. The whole thing looks like a cross-section through a sea cucumber. It must be a representative of an older order, a living fossil left over from some weird family of organisms mostly rendered extinct by the Cambrian biodiversity catastrophe, when the structures that lie buried 2 kilometers below a nameless British Antarctic survey base were built. I stare at the fossil because it seems like an omen. A thing transported from its natural environment, washed up and left to die on an alien beach beneath the gaze of creatures incomprehensible to it. That's a good metaphor for humanity in this age, the humanity that the laundry is sworn to defend. Never mind the panoply of state and secrecy, the Cold War trappings of village and security cordon. What it's about when you get down to it is this: our appalling vulnerability, collectively, before the onslaught of beings we can barely comprehend. A lesser one, not even one of the great old ones, would be enough to devastate a city. We play under the shadow of forces so sinister that a momentary relaxation of vigilance would see all that is human blotted out. I can go back to London, and they will let me go back to my desk and my stuffy cubicle and my job fixing broken office machines. No recriminations, just a job for life and a pension in 30 years' time, in return for a promise of silence to the grave. Or I can go back to the office in the village and sign the piece of paper that says they can do whatever they like with me. Unthanked, possibly fatal service, anywhere in the world. Called on to do things which may well be repugnant and which I will never be able to talk about. Maybe no pension at all. Just an unmarked grave in some isolated defile on a Central Asian plateau, or a sock-shod foot washed up, unaccompanied, on a Pacific beach one morning while the crabs dine heavy. Nobody ever volunteered for field ops because of the pay and conditions. On the other hand, I look at the starfish thing and see eyes, human eyes, with worms moving inside them, and I realize that there is no choice. Really. There never was a choice. Chapter 3. Defector. 3 months later, to the nearest minute, I am loosely attached to the U.S. desk, working on my first field assignment. This would normally be an extremely stressful point in my career, except that this is very much a low-stress training mission, as Santa Cruz is one of the nicest parts of California, and right now having my fingernails pulled out by the Spanish Inquisition would be more pleasant than putting up with Mary. So I'm making the most of it, sitting in a tacky bar down on a seaside pier, nursing a cold glass of Santa Cruz Brewing Company wheat beer, and watching the pelicans practice their touch-and-goes on the railing outside. It's early summer, and the temperature's in the mid-20s. The beach is covered in babes, boardwalk refugees, and surf Nazis. This being Santa Cruz, I'm wearing cut-off jeans, a psychedelic t-shirt, and a back-to-front baseball cap. But I can't kid myself about passing for a native. I've got the classic geek complexion, one a goth would kill for. And in Santa Cruz, even the geeks get out in the sun once in a while. Not to mention wearing more than one earring. My contact is a guy called Mo. Actually, I'm not sure that isn't a pseudonym. Nobody seems to know very much about the mysterious Mo, except he's an expatriate British academic, and he's having trouble coming home. All of which makes me wonder why the laundry is involved at all, as opposed to the consulate in San Francisco. A bit of background is in order. After all, aren't the UK and the USA allies? Well, yes and no. No two countries have identical interests, and the result is a blurred area where self-interest causes erstwhile allies to act toward one another in a less-than-friendly manner. Mossad spies on the CIA. In the 1970s, Romania and Bulgaria spied on the Soviet Union. This doesn't mean their leaders aren't slurping each other's cigars, but... In 1945, the UK and the USA signed a joint intelligence-sharing treaty that opened their most secret institutions to mutual inspection and exchange. At the time, they were fighting a desperate war against a common enemy. Not many people outside the Secret Services understand just how close to the abyss we stood, even as late as April 1945. There's nothing like facing a diabolical enemy set on your complete destruction to cement an alliance at the highest level. And for the first few post-war years, the UK-USA treaty kept us singing from the same hymn book. But UK-USA relations deteriorated over the following decade. Partly this was a side effect of the Helsinki Protocol, when even Molotov agreed that occult weapons of the type envisaged by Hitler's Thule Society minions were too deadly to use. A lot of the pressure came off the alliance.